Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Canadian Energy Services and Technology Corp conference call and webcast with respect to the recently announced results for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2017, and the recently announced proposed corporate name change. Presenting for the company today will be Mr. Tom Simons, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Craig Nieboer, Chief Financial Officer. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. A question and answer session will follow the end of the presentation. Please also be advised that this conference call may not be recorded or rebroadcast without the consent of Canadian Energy Services. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Mr. Craig Nieboer. Please go ahead, Mr. Nieboer.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for attending today's call. Before we start, I'd like to note that in our commentary today, there will be forward-looking financial information, and that our actual results may differ materially from the expected results due to various risk factors and assumptions. These risk factors and assumptions are summarized in our first quarter MD&A and press release dated May 11, 2017, and in our annual information form dated March 9, 2017. In addition, certain financial measures that we will refer to today are not recognized under current generally accepted accounting policies, and for a description and definition of these, please see our first quarter MD&A. At this time, I'll turn it over to Tom.
Good morning. We're pleased to do today's call. Q1 marked our best quarter since oil was $100 back in 2014. All business units are making significant and important contributions. Today's call will provide a detailed operations update for all of our business units. We'll share our outlook for the company and for industry, and we'll talk about our strategy to grow our business. We will update listeners on a number of important matters, specifically Stimworks, a new addition to CES. We'll talk about a tough situation. We had a recent fire at Easter at part of our plant in Kansas, and we'll talk about our proposed company name change. Craig will provide a detailed financial update, and then we'll take questions and wrap up the call. Our Q1 results were reflective of improved industry conditions. Our customers are back to making money, which generally means they spend cash flow and grow production. We've carefully and deliberately built a business that can sell chemicals, polymers, minerals for drilling, fracking, now workovers, treating production, and treating storage tanks and pipelines. We've truly become a full cycle chemical provider for oil and gas exploration and production. I'll start the operations update with Canadian Drilling Fluids. The Canadian Drilling Fluid business unit enjoyed a fantastic quarter. We held market share that was over one-third of the rigs that drilled in Canada during the quarter. Today, we're servicing 32 rigs. Most of those jobs are Montney or Montney-like drills, so deep with long horizontals, and SAGD. So Q2 will be a nice quarter for Canadian Drilling Fluids as well. In Q1, we continued to grow within our existing customers. We consistently helped our customers drill deeper and drill longer horizontals, which translates into good results for Canadian Drilling Fluids. We enjoyed a strong share of the once again active SAGD market, which is again very good for our results. Our Southeast Saskatchewan Drilling Fluid Group continues to dominate that market. Overall, we're very pleased with our position in the Canadian drilling fluid market. Through the downturn, we maintained our edge, which is our culture and our talent that can win business by solving problems. And we now have our fixed costs low enough that we expect to even be profitable in Q2 with current activity. We're consistently outperforming our competitors, both in terms of performance for our customer and I would say performance for our shareholders. Canadian Drilling Fluids is our most established and best example of the power of vertical integration for products, for sharing scientific resources across the company, and being led by working managers. We believe Canadian Drilling Fluids is representative of what all of our business units can become over time as we build out our business. On to production chemicals for Canada. PureChem has established itself as a force in the Canadian market. We continue to expand in the conventional market. Our penetration in the Deep Basin has become significant. We're very focused on this market and expect to invest in permanent infrastructure in that market this year. We believe we can grow with this growing market. We're also winning new business in heavy oil and oil sands. We continue to get more opportunities in oil sands as we further establish PureChem as an alternative to the two incumbents, Baker and Nelco Champion. These two markets, the Deep Basin and heavy oil sands, represent huge potential for PureChem. We're playing the long game here. We're going to build the team that can win the trust of the customers. We're going to give the team the necessary tools, which are the right products, a world-class laboratory in Calgary, and an unrelenting commitment to those markets. I'll remind listeners, we dominate the SAGD market in drilling fluids, which is a nice launch pad to the production piece of the business. To that end, Clear Environmental is also a leader in water management in the oil sands, which is another way we're already credibly established as a business with those customers. PureChem enjoyed a good Q1 selling to the frac market. We continue to supply two pressure pumper customers and hope over time to expand that market penetration. Our Carlisle expansion is largely complete with a build-out planned for the Grand Prairie area. We believe we can continue to significantly build out PureChem. We have tremendous leadership. We're continuously improving our talent by recruiting top people and training the people we already have. We expect big things from PureChem. We added a new business unit in the quarter to Canadian operations called Stimworks. We'd courted this specialized business for some time. The business is entirely complementary to CES. It's a new way to sell the products we already manufacture. We can utilize our products, our infrastructure, our labs, our scientists, and our existing customer relationships. These are small jobs that revive production from existing wells. It's a niche market that expands our company. We think the team can grow its share in the Canadian market and eventually work off of our platform in the U.S., particularly our strongest market in the U.S., the Permian. Our environmental business unit in Canada, Clear Environmental, was able to have a very good Q1. Clear continues to provide technical support to customers to dispose of drilling fluid waste. And it's building an increasing business managing water needs for our customers, which increases Clear's addressable market to include the frac market. Clear also continues to evaluate technologies and ideas around water for industry. Examples of these would be ways to reduce water consumption for industry, both for drilling and completions, and to look at new ways to dispose of produced water besides injection for disposal. Sialco continues to play an important role in the company. Sialco is our chemical reactor manufacturer business in Delta, BC. It's increasingly playing a role in internal supply chain, and as we hoped, it's becoming our internal technology partner for all of the business units. Terry and his team continue to work towards commercialization of a cationic polymer for the frac market. This is where high brine waters are used to build the frac. Cationic polymers are a very complicated molecule to produce. It's a niche market where we're confident we can generate significant sales all off of our existing drilling fluid or production chemical platform. So no or little capital and no or few new people required to add a lot of new revenue. We like that kind of business a lot. Many other opportunities like this exist, and we hope to exploit those over time. On to the U.S. part of the business. At AES, we had our best quarter since oil prices turned down. We ran 80 to 85 jobs through the quarter, and today are running 87. 50 of those are in West Texas. We have a dozen plus in the Northeast U.S., the Eagle Ford, Mid-Continent, and Rockies making up the balance. We're able to make money in the U.S. drilling fluid market primarily because of three factors. We lowered our cost base for operating the business significantly in 2016. We're winning more technically challenging work, for example, in the Delaware Basin, where people are increasingly drilling deeper horizontals, which means deeper and further horizontal wells, which is good for drilling fluid revenue and product mix. The other important factor is our low cost of goods because of vertical integration. If activity for drilling fluids or drilling holds or grows in the U.S., AES can continue to make a good contribution to the business. Any price increases would just be gravy. We do not expect increases to be possible without stronger commodity prices and for Halliburton and others to raise prices. Our barite mill produced 16,000 tons in April, which is indicative of good overall volumes for AES drilling fluids. AES frac is eagerly awaiting our cationic polymer. We think we can sell a lot of this molecule. Frac revenue today is largely coming through Catalyst and JChem. We believe that we've considerable upside in this market if industry conditions hold. On to U.S. production chemicals. Treatment points continue to grow for JChem Catalyst. Our biggest growth is happening in West Texas. Our customers are growing their production in that market. It's where our leadership for JChem Catalyst is based, which is a massive competitive advantage for us. We have a very established presence in the best market in North America, maybe the world. Our reaction plant in Kansas can support and supply our people, blend plant, and two labs in Midland. Our customers in West Texas continue to report increasing new IPs on their wells, and we get to treat those greater volumes of production. Our legacy business in the Bakken and Mid-Continent continue to be a steady contributor to our production chemical business. On to our outlook. Our outlook for all parts of our business is favorable. If oil hangs around 50 and if gas is near $3, all parts of the business can make money. Our customers will be cash flow positive, and we expect they'll put that cash flow back into the ground. We think we can grow AES drilling fluid market share. We can get a nice contribution from frac sales as we commercialize technologies like our cationic polymer. We're also currently selling nanotechnology surfactants that act as flow enhancers. We see Sialco as being an incubator for products like these. Surfactants are Sialco's expertise because of their business in the cosmetic space. We're growing our production treating business in both Canada and the U.S. We'll continue to use a decentralized sales and management model for our business units, and we'll continue to share common manufacturing, common scientists and labs, where today we have over 50 scientists, and common distribution and logistics, and a common back end of the business. We had a fire that we need to report to listeners. We had a fire that largely destroyed our organophilic clay plant at Easter weekend. These assets are insured, and the loss of margin is also insured. It will not affect our operations in any way, and we expect 7 to 10 months to rebuild. I will note that we'll apply learnings from this incident to improve our practices, to both better protect our people and our assets, and to reduce risk of this kind of thing happening again. I'll touch on our name change, and then I'll turn things over to Craig. We're changing the company name, or proposing to change it, to CES Energy Solutions Corp. We think it's more reflective of the business than a Canadian-based name. We hope that it helps U.S. investors take a closer look at our business. We will continue with sub-brands in keeping with our decentralized sales and management model. And we like to maintain the CES brand as we think we've built value through our 10 years of success as a public business. I'll now turn it over to Craig.
Thanks, Tom. As Tom outlined, the positive Q1 2017 results are reflective of increased activity and market share gains achieved across all facets of our business. Q1 2017, CES generated revenue of $252.4 million, an increase of 84% over comparative Q1 2016 of $137.1 million. With our vertically integrated consumable chemicals business model, as we've come off our fixed cost base And based on the operating leverage in our business, more of this incremental revenue can continue to find its way to the bottom line. EBITDAC for Q1 2017 was $36.1 million versus $6.6 million comparative quarter Q1 2016 for an increase of 447%. Sequentially, since bottoming in Q2 2016 at zero, EBITDAC has improved quarter over quarter without price improvement, but based on improved volumes through our North American-wide platform. From a balance sheet perspective, CES is in a very strong position to continue to capitalize on the industry rebound. We've begun to draw on our senior operating line as we build working capital. As of today, we are drawing $50 million with $100 million of unused availability. Our total debt to trailing 12-month EBITDA is now at about 4, and on a net debt basis, taking into account positive working capital, we are at under 1 net debt to trailing 12-month EBITDA. At this time, we'll open up the call for questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a brief moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Greg Coleman with National Bank Finance. Your line is open.
Hi, gentlemen. Congratulations on the quarter.
Thanks, Greg.
Got a couple quick ones. Tom, I was wondering if we could start by taking a look down in the Permian with the Catalyst integration. You touched on a couple of the new products being rolled out across that. I was wondering if you could give us a little bit more, you know, hopefully quantification or quartile that you're in terms of the penetration of the wider suite of CEU's products through the Catalyst customer base. Is the results we saw in Q1 indicative of just sort of scraping the surface on that rollout? Or is it, you know, halfway through or largely complete, and now we're looking at more market share gains as opposed to, you know, the cross-selling gains?
The answer, Greg, is probably that it's early stages. You know, Vern and Trey and their people did a lot of due diligence on us. They had a lot of options with their business last year, and part of what they saw was SuperCore, solids chemistry, and obviously that we could backward integrate some of their products as a way for them to improve the results in that market. So we hit the ground running August 1st last year as we pursued new business together using those kinds of technologies. So we've had pretty good adoption of SuperCore, of solid chemistry in West Texas. But to me, the most exciting thing, though, is that I think that that area is very early innings. So I think going forward, you know, more bullets in the gun in a market that's poised to really grow, I think it's going to be pretty powerful.
Got it. Okay, so early stages, but good adoption so far. And then just staying down there and taking a look at the type of the basin you're dealing with, you touched on a few products that are being distributed into the Permian there that are having a good impact. But can you give us a feeling for the bigger picture per well economics of a Permian well versus, say, something in the Deep Basin that we're more familiar with in terms of, you know, the economics surrounding it? Is the ultimate addressable potential of the Permian style chemistry and chemical perspective the same size as what we're used to in the Deep Basin, materially higher or materially lower?
I think it's similar, except that geographically it's bigger. To drill a well there compared to the Deep Basin, I'd say the drilling fluid revenue spud to release is probably a little less, but the daily revenue is about the same. You drill through salt in the Delaware, followed by a fragile formation that wants to take lost circulation and then potentially pressure above the pay zone. So you've got a bunch of things happening in the well bore. The salt can wash out. It makes the fluid heavy. The heavy fluid breaks the lost circulation zone down, and then you need density to stop pressure. And so, you know, that's kind of a nice combination for the drilling fluid company, because if you can engineer a solution to those things and drill that in one interval instead of two, you save the operator a lot of money, which is your value proposition. and you get the work. The wells aren't quite as vertically deep generally as the deep basin, which is why spud to release, they're a little less money, but they're complex. We've got technology that's had good adoption and are looking for, you know, sort of new ways to even improve. On the frac side, as people go to reusing old frac fluid or using produced water, there's upside for us in the frac market. And with oil prices coming off bottom, people are again looking at ways to increase IP through the use of surfactants, scale inhibitor, shale inhibitor in the frac. It's not just pump a lot of water and a lot of sand. It's now look at the science of the frac again. And on the production treating side, I'd say it's similar. There's a lot of different issues. You're mingling production from different formations often. And in some parts of West Texas, there's a lot of water with the production, which brings a whole host of problems that we can treat. I'd say what's better about West Texas than the Deep Basin is that there's no uncertainty that you can get your product to market if you're an operator. And obviously, you don't need to necessarily hope that you're going to have social license to work in that market. Those people want those jobs. They want the industry there. New Mexico's tighter environmentally, which is a good thing for us. But overall, that market's really strong. I was there last week. I'm back next week. I've kind of told you, Greg, if my kids were older, that'd be where to live if you're in the oil field.
Got it. Okay, thank you, Tom, for that color. I just had one other, Craig, actually, on the working capital side of things. As you were mentioning there, a bit of a draw on the line to fund the working capital. Can you just give a reminder as to what we should be thinking on the cadence for the coming quarters? Of the $60 million working capital draw in Q1, you know, should we expect the majority of that to come back at us in Q2? Probably a little bit less, just with the changing dynamics of the business. I'm just trying to get some cash flow expectations there.
Yeah, it's a lot of moving parts there, Greg, but for sure with breakup in Canada, we should see some return to the balance sheet of that working capital in Q2. But as you kind of indicated, with our U.S. business being so much larger than it has been in years past, that kind of return will be somewhat muted. I would expect, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 million comes back in Q2. And then probably, you know, it depends on what the back half looks like. I mean, we're still in a sub-$50 oil market today, so that's why we said in our outlook we're modestly optimistic. We think there's good things happening, but I don't think we're out of the woods yet as an industry at $48 a barrel. But, you know, given relatively decent activity in the back half of the year, we'll probably build working capital some more than from where it is at the end of Q1. But with cash flow, you know, I expect the operating line won't be much differently drawn than it is today at year end.
Great. Thanks, Craig. That's it for me. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from Steve Kammermayer with Claris Securities. Your line is open.
Oh, good morning, guys.
Hey, Steve.
You showed some excellent growth on the U.S. production chemicals. Just wondering how much of that would be attributable to the Catalyst acquisition versus organic growth?
I think the bulk of that, Steve, is coming off the Catalyst acquisition, but even growth off that since August 1st. I mean, West Texas is going to be where most of the new production is coming on in the United States, and we have a very good share there. And as Tom indicated, even since acquisition, we've closed some new customers there with our combined forces.
Yeah, and we're growing within existing customers there. We're taking work from competitors, Steve, and then they're growing their production there. So we're kind of riding the wave and maybe getting on a bigger wave.
Okay. Maybe just on taking the work from competitors, growing the market share, is that a function of you guys being price competitive versus your competitors, or is it more sort of the business model where you tailor individual solutions to your customers?
It's performance-based. Because we're a manufacturer, you know, we're cost competitive with Nalco and Baker, who are, you know, the 2,000-pound gorillas. But the difference is our people. It's It's our unrelenting commitment to solve the problem near the wellhead so the turnaround is fast. It's the willingness to formulate new products for better performance. And if you take that customized sense of urgency with a good unit price, you know, to the well, you win more than you lose.
Okay, good. Maybe just one more. Just so, I mean, the last few quarters have been pretty good, growing cash flow. I realize you're using that to ramp up the operations, but what does it take before you look at the dividend, and would you target a specific payout ratio, or are you looking for some longer-term stability with the WTI price?
I think at this time, Stephen, it's prudent to keep shareholders' cash on the balance sheet. We obviously are consuming that cash right now to build working capital. I think historically we would be in payout ratios that would tell us to touch the dividend, but I think as a vertically integrated producer of chemicals, I think we're going to look at the dividend a lot more like an industrial. It's something that we'll probably review, you know, on a semi-annual basis in detail, but at this stage of the turnaround, we think it's prudent to be conservative with the balance sheet and retain that cash on the balance sheet.
Okay. Good. That's all I had, guys. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Jason Zhang with Cormark. Your line is open.
Thanks. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Just a quick one on Stimworks. Tom, you mentioned that they sort of help you gain a new way to sell products that you already manufacture. Could you go into that with a little bit more detail, maybe in terms of what the sales channel looks like for Stimworks?
Sure. It's a city sale, so it's like drilling. It would be like frac, whereas production is largely a field sale. You're dealing with a production engineer in most cases. They've got a field full of producing wells. Ideally, we're treating that production. And our guys go in. The business is led by two P-Engs. They've got a small technical sales team downtown as well, and they go in and look at producing fields and give technical advice on ways to revive wells that are acting a little tired. So put a solvent with chemical in it in the hole, treat it with a blend of acids. It's a niche market. These guys, we noticed, you know, as kind of competing or trying to compete through PureChem, that these guys had a niche that they were experts at. One of the founders came from the E&P side. So it's a good business for us, no assets, don't need trucks, use third-party equipment to pump the product or spot it in the hole and turn inventory. And it's all based on science and results. If it works, then the customer feels emboldened to try it on other wells in the field. So slowly they're building up their clientele, and we see this as a very portable model to go into the U.S. as well.
Great, thanks. That's all I had. All my other questions have been answered.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, it is star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Ian Gillies with GMP. Your line is open.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Ian.
Are you able to provide any context of what you think the addressable market may be for the cationic polymers, or is it really trying to build out a market on the frac side and trying to help with the brine, or is it something that you can go in and kind of steal market share on today?
There's a couple big industrial chemical companies that have went around their historical customer, the pumpers, and they're supplying mostly directly to E&Ps in the U.S., Ian. I don't know. The addressable market, we think, is growing, not just because people are back drilling and completing, but because people are increasingly looking to not take their produced water to injection. Obviously, that's a big issue in Oklahoma. There are a lot of, you know, very established independent E&Ps that have challenged their people to find other ways to handle produced water than injection. And, you know, it's areas where it's hard to dispose of as well, like the Northeast U.S. It's areas where there can be shortages of water, which has happened in the deep basin here. You know, we supply some chemistry to industry for energized fracs where people use nitrogen instead of water to create volume for their frac. I don't know how to quantify it, but I think it's going to get bigger in time. And it puts us on location where we can then try and sell these surfactants or shale inhibitors or biocides or scale inhibitors. And those are all products, as you know, that we make.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. And I mean, would it be fair to say then it is very much tied on to the frac side of the business as well?
Yeah, although there could be applications for it in water management as well.
Okay.
So there's only a handful of people that make that molecule or make it cost effectively. We have a good sense of where we'll be on input costs and production costs. So we think we're going to be in business. And that, you know, that could be 2 weeks or 2 years. There's so many different things that go into making this. We wouldn't be publicly talking about it and preparing to sell it if we didn't think we were very close. We're at scale up. So we've been able to build it on the bench. We've been able to build it on a pilot plant. But the scale up itself takes maybe a month in a plant to make sure that you've got it just right so you can repeatedly build big volumes.
Okay, thanks. That's very helpful. The other thing I wanted to follow on with Jason's question with Stimworks, given the different sales channels, would it be fair to say then through Stimworks, at a point of sale, that the absolute dollar amount would be quite a bit larger and there's probably some advantages to that rather than field sales?
They're like selling a small mud job. Like an enormous job would be $100,000, a regular job's $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000. What really caught our attention is that this appears to be a place that the operator will spend money even when oil prices are very low, because they've already got the well drilled, completed, and producing. And if for a modest amount of money they can give that well a shot of chemical juice to increase the production, they have the sort of willingness to do that inside the shop, and it's not 10 layers of approval within the operator. So the guys saw their business grow in 16 when everyone else shrunk.
Okay. That's helpful. And last one for me, on the cost side, if activity continues to ramp up, I mean, which bucket should we think about where costs are going, into G&A or into cost of goods sold? Maybe put another way, do you need to add more people on the G&A line, or are you comfortable with where you are today and you think that kind of just runs out flat from here?
Well, I think it's impossible to ramp up a business and think you're going to be flat for two reasons. One, we are going to have to add some headcount, and there will be inflation on people costs over time. But for us, we kept most of the core through the downturn on the, call it, back office side of engineering and support and sales. So most of our growth should be kind of variably added to the business, and you should actually see, you know, the people component of cost of goods sold and the people component of G&A become a smaller percentage of top line than in the past, but in gross numbers it's going to go up a bit for sure.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much. I'll turn it back over.
There are no further questions at this time. I will turn the call back over to the presenters.
Okay, well, thank you. In summary, the business can clearly generate excellent results in these market conditions. We believe we can grow all business units and still maintain our flexibility or ability to batten down the hatches if we need to, if there's further volatility in the future in commodity prices and activity. We'll look to continue to expand our manufacturing capabilities over time, which specifically means finishing hydrogenation in Kansas, getting basic in EBs or emulsion breakers, and getting basic in pipeline products. And these are longer term goals, the last two, EBs and pipeline products. We'll continue to recruit the best people in industry. I believe if we do those things, we can generate superior results both for our customers and for our shareholders. We'd like to say thank you to our customers for their business and trust, and importantly to our employees for their outstanding efforts. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.